This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Believe it or not, science can be pretty funny. For example, one of the oldest jokes in the book is slipping on a banana peel. So what is the science behind the loss of friction when you step on that peel? Or, here's another big question for you, do cats somehow change the brains of their owners to make humans take care of them? That's something to consider the next time you clean out the litter box. These are questions celebrated with the Ig Nobel Awards. Do you have a nomination for this award that celebrates science, but science that asks the strangest questions? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. Our guest this half hour is Mark Abrams. He's the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research. Mark, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
And let me mention that you're going to be tonight at St. Mary's University at the Lynn Great Speakers Series. This is an event that's free and open to the public. So that's pretty cool. So I want to talk about this cat thing.
Do you own a cat?
There is a
cat. Do you own more than one cat? Do you own more than 10 cats?
I do not own a cat. There is a cat that lives in my house. Okay, I don't want to get into it. But what is the deal?
Does your cat own you?
Not me, but it does own members of my family. So what is it with these cats and the way that they can actually change a person's brain?
There's a parasite, a little tiny microbe, a little tiny, tiny living thing called Toxoplasma, which gets into the brains of many cats, gets into the brains of many other kinds of animals too. And when it gets into the brains of certain animals, it can change the way those animals behave. Gets into the brains of mice. When this little creature gets into the brains of a mouse, what it causes the mouse to do is suddenly be attracted to the urine smell of a cat. The thing that normally a mouse is frightened of and runs away from. And these mice are now attracted to cats. And this same parasite gets into the brains of cats, may affect their behavior. And sometimes it gets into the brains of humans.
And what happens when people are infected with this?
Nobody's quite sure. And that's the worrisome thing to some people. And there are other parasites like this. It's just in the last 20 years that some scientists have been really paying attention to these things and finding nature and biology are even more complicated than people realized. There is a question that a few of these people are wondering about, that does this somehow change the behavior of some of the people whose brains it gets into, so that in effect they are, if you want to think of it this way, almost the slave of the cat. They're behaving in ways that benefit the cat more than they believe.
And there is a fungus in the Amazon rainforest that infects insects, that it makes them crawl up trees and basically become and then they sprout out more fungus and spread the fungus further. They become zombies to this fungus.
Yeah,
there's weird things inside.
Of course, there's an old joke that there's some kind of microbe that gets into the brains of certain humans and makes them want to become a politician, but that's just a joke.
Well, it is a joke. But that's what you do. You specialize in jokes like this, very dry humor.
Actually not. I don't do jokes. Mostly what I do is collect real things that make people laugh and then think. That's the quality I look for. Things that are, to most people, so far outside anything they normally run across that it's just funny when you first see it or hear about it. But once you've heard about it, there's something so intriguing that you can't stop thinking about it, and you want to find your best friend and tell them.
So you are looking for the Ig Nobel Awards. Just talk about that. Tell me, how did this come about?
All right. 25 years ago, I became the editor of a science magazine. That itself happened in an unusual way. I sent some articles into the magazine to see if they might print something, because I'd never even tried to get anything printed in a magazine, but I was curious. So I mailed some articles in, and a few weeks later, I got a phone call from somebody saying, "Hi, I'm the publisher of the magazine. I got your articles. Would you be the editor of the magazine?" And that's how I became a magazine editor. And when I became the editor, I started to meet all kinds of people. And some of them, many of them had done things that were so outside the range of what what most people ever come into, that were funny and thought-provoking. And after a while, I kept thinking, it's a terrible shame. Most of these people are going to go their whole lives, and nobody will ever know they did this. Nobody will ever, you know, their family will know and a few friends, but most people never know that there was somebody who did this, and that's wrong. Somebody should do something. And I thought, well, we can do something small. So we started this little ceremony, the Ig Nobel Prize ceremony. We give out 10 prizes every year for things that make people laugh and then think. We had it the first 4 years at MIT, a big engineering school in Massachusetts. Then we moved it 2 miles down the road to Harvard, where we have it every year. And every year, now we get 9,000 or so nominations every year for the Ig Nobel Prize. We pick 10 things. We invite them to the ceremony. They have to come at their own expense because we don't have money to fly them in. Ceremonies held at Harvard University, this grand old meeting place at Harvard. We get a bunch of Nobel Prize winners, real Nobel Prize winners up on the stage, who shake the hands of the winners. And the Nobel laureates look at the Ig Nobel laureates straight in the eye, and neither one can quite believe that it's happening.
Fans of Science Friday have heard this award ceremony condensed. Truncated, usually on the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yep, starting, I think, in 1992, Science Friday records the whole ceremony. They edit it down to an hour, and their tradition is now the day after Thanksgiving. That's their show.
Is it fair to call the Ig Nobel the anti-Nobel Prize?
I'm not sure what's fair or not fair. It's not accurate. It's there's just no connection whatsoever. It's like they're at right angles. They have nothing. The Nobel Prize is important, for one thing. So it's one big difference. The Nobel Prizes are important. The Ig Nobel Prizes are not important.
And they fly you out to Stockholm, I think.
Yeah, they do all kinds of wonderful things. And the Nobel Prizes, like most prizes, are about things that are supposed to be the very, very best. Almost every prize in the universe is for either the very best at something or the very worst, like the worst movie prizes and the worst dress list.
Like raspberries.
Raspberries, things like that. But the Ig Nobels are different. Good and bad, that has nothing to do with the Ig Nobels. Important or worthless has nothing to do with it. It's only, does it make people laugh and then think?
Laugh, then think.
Yep.
We could do that.
Okay.
Let's try that some more. All right, we're talking about the Ig Nobel Awards. We're talking about science that makes you laugh and think. We invite you to call in if you've got a suggestion, an idea, a notion about something that should be explored that you think is pretty funny. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And with us is Mark Abrams, the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research. He'll be speaking tonight at St. Mary's University at the Lynn Great Speakers Series. That is free and open to the public. More information about that is going to be on our website, tpr.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about science that is funny, but it can also make you think. And we have an example of that. This is an event where Professor Stephen Hawking was at, and he was asked a very important question.
Well, we have a final question from Samantha Sue. Samantha, please stand up if you're out there. What do you think is the cosmological effect of Zayn leaving One Direction and consequently breaking the hearts of millions of teenage girls across the world? And I confess I have no idea what I'm talking about, but Stephen, you follow these things much more closely than I do. So what do you say to Samantha?
Finally, a question about something important. My advice to any heartbroken young girl is to pay close attention to the study of theoretical physics. Because one day, there may well be proof of multiple universes. It would not then be beyond the realms of possibility that somewhere outside of our own universe lies another different universe. And in that universe, Zane is still in One Direction.
And that is Stephen Hawking, and we're talking about science that is funny but also makes you think. And we're joined by Mark Abrams, the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research, and he is also the man behind the Ig Nobel Awards. He's going to be speaking tonight at St. Mary's University. Multi-dimensional universes, different parallel universes, that's thought-worthy. Is that stuff kind of stuff that pops up in your field?
Not so much. That's off in the world of theory that nobody is really sure yet about whether that's true or not. Right now it's an idea and they're trying to figure out whether to test whether it's real or not.
Okay.
But so, I'll give you some examples, yeah. some things that have won Ig Nobel Prizes, again, for things that make people laugh and then think real things. We gave the Ig Nobel Medicine Prize last year to a team of doctors who had treated a difficult case, and they came up with an innovative way of treating it. The case was somebody who had what's called incurable nosebleed. It's somebody who's had a bleeding nose that wouldn't stop. And the doctors were quite desperate because, of course, if somebody keeps bleeding and you can't stop it, the person is not going to last very long. And they couldn't find anything. They tried every treatment they knew of. And in desperation, they tried one more treatment that somebody had heard about. They thought, there's no chance, but we've got to do something. And it worked, and it saved the patient's life. And they ended up writing a paper that they published in a medical journal, so all other doctors can learn about this in case they need it. And it's called, the method is called curing nosebleed through the method of cured pork up the nose. What they did was get a piece of cured pork and stuff it up the patient's nose. And it worked. And it turns out it wasn't just a legend that if you go back to the 1920s and 30s, you can find a bunch of medical papers, which now are pretty funny to read, from different doctors in different places telling about cases in which they had saved somebody's life by stuffing cured pork up their nose. Back then, it was a little more dangerous because back then, the curing of the pork was not always done so efficiently, and there were sometimes little parasites in the pork, so it was occasionally dangerous. And even now, these doctors do not, they say they do not recommend it as the first treatment of choice. But if you're, I mentioned that one first because you, anybody who's listening, someday, who knows, might be in a situation where you see there's somebody who has nosebleed that won't stop, there's a doctor treating it, and the doctor doesn't know what to do. You know what to do now.
Cured pork.
Just get some bacon.
Bacon, that'll
Don't
work.
Cook it. It's got to be moist.
Can you spam?
That's a good question. That has yet to be tested.
That's the next test, you know. So we asked this question in the billboard before the program about the five-second rule. Mm-hmm. So what's up with that?
Most people have heard of the five-second rule or something like that. The idea is if you drop a piece of food on the floor, maybe it's safe to pick it up and eat it if it's only been there a few seconds. Now, a few years ago, somebody finally tested that. They measured how many bacteria were on the floor, and then they put some food down on the floor, and then they measured how many bacteria were attached to the food. And the somebody who did it was a high school girl in Illinois. She was the first person to do any kind of very careful test about it, and we gave her the Ig Nobel Prize that year for doing it. What she discovered was that, yeah, the five-second rule is safe to follow, sort of. if the floor is very clean and if the food is not sticky, then maybe it's okay. Otherwise, you're probably better off not eating the stuff. One of the nice things that happened, again, this was a high school girl who did this, and she got a lot of publicity around the world because she got this prize for it. Over the next year, we, who organized the Ig Nobel ceremony, got a lot of letters from biology professors around the world saying, I had been planning that someday when I get a little free time, I was going to be the person who tested this and published a scientific paper and become famous. And now this high school girl has scooped me.
It's like we say, good ideas don't get better. They just get old. You have to act on them right away. And thus, her success. So how scientific the rigor behind the science in these for these projects are they is that important?
Rigor. Well, you know the phrase rigor mortis. Anything you can look at or talk about can possibly cut in many different directions. With the Ig Nobel Prizes, if you look down over the list, and if you go to our website at improbable.com, you can see all the winners. There have been 240 prizes given out over the years.
I can tell you, your website is a wormhole. you start pushing around in there, and you'll never get out.
There's lots of stuff there, and I would bet that almost anybody could go there, and eventually they would run across somebody they know who did something. What was I saying?
Oh, about the rigor and about the...
The rigor. The prizes, again, are just for things that make people laugh and then think. Some of them, almost anybody would look at and decide, wow, that's a great piece of science. Some of them, almost anybody would look at and say, that's terrible, but it's funny and it makes me think. And then there's everything else. And the everything else, people disagree. One of the fun things for us every year, after we've come out with the 10 new winners each year, over the next year, we get to hear people discussing them with their friends. And almost always a group of people, even three or four friends, will get together, they'll look down the list, and they get into an argument. There are always two or three that they disagree. One of them will say, that's terrible. And another one says, you know, I happen to know something about that. That actually is very important.
Well, I've always wondered about that myself.
Yeah.
So I know you get so many submissions to get one of these awards. But I figured if I wanted to game the system to try and juice my chances,
good luck to you.
I would do something poop related, because it seems like there's a lot of poop winners in your category, in your list.
Well, that's you. That's what you do.
I mean, there's a lot of them there.
There, I think you're paying attention to things you're already interested
in. So it's a
in,
bias.
Is what I think, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
People do try to game the system, and it never does any good. It's because really, it comes down to, is something so funny to almost anybody anywhere in the world that they will laugh at it when they first hear about it, and does it get in their head so they're going to keep thinking about it afterwards?
Okay, like here's from the most recent awards: Pooperoni. What is it?
Pooperoni? That's
baby poop landed scientists.
Well, you invented that phrase, Pooperoni.
Baby poop landed scientists from Spain on the nutrition prize.
Okay, you're reading some news report. That was a prize that was given to a team of five scientists in Spain. What they did was test a new source for probiotic bacteria. You know, when you have yogurt, things, that there's bacteria that's involved in making that. And some of that bacteria, some people think, if you eat it, will cause you to have better health. So it's called probiotic. And it comes from various sources. These scientists in Spain decided to take it from an obviously healthy source, from a living organism that's obviously not disease. They took it from the feces of infants.
Okay.
And they used that bacteria as the probiotic starter material to make fermented breakfast sausages. Now, you might ask yourself, what kind of men would do this?
Twisted men.
It's not men. It's five scientists, and they're all women.
Okay. And that won an award.
That won a prize. And the scientists were very happy about it.
So let me ask you, so they have the celebration. It is a celebration of science.
We have video of them eating the sausage with big smiles on their faces.
And so, and you have the Nobel Prize winners joining with this in mm-hmm. the celebration. There's so much goodwill going on at these events, and it's happiness and fun. And it's incredible that there's all of this positive energy is coming out of this event.
Oh, you can believe it. It's real. It happens.
Oh, I believe it. But I mean, how do you account for it?
People love to be surprised, and they love to be surprised by things that suddenly put them in a position where they have a great story to tell their friends, so great that their friends are going to want to hear more.
But, you know, scientists are usually so obsessed with their credentials, and they want to be taken seriously, and they don't want to do anything that's going to, I mean, this is the stereotype, that they don't want to be, you know, poo-pooed. And
there you go again.
And How is it that they're able to work through that to celebrate ignoble?
Well, you just told me the answer to that. That's stereotype. There is the stereotype that scientists are all completely somber and serious all the time, and they walk around in lab coats and they worry about what people think about them. There are a few scientists like that, but there aren't too many. And in fact, most of the other scientists find those scientists to be kind of funny. You know, scientists, almost all of them, some exceptions, are human beings. And what they're doing, when you really think about what a scientist is doing, a professional, they spend all their time trying to understand things nobody else has been able to understand. So it's very frustrating what they're doing. Most of the time, they're going to fail at what they do. But if they keep at it and they're a little lucky every once in a while, they are going to figure out a little something nobody managed to. And the few times they do that, that's a great day.
Have you heard of teachers mining your website for ways to teach physics and chemistry and things to students?
Yeah, there are a lot of students, a lot of teachers who tell us they will sometimes print out a page of our stuff and just slip it in with everything else that they give to students, because they know that even on the worst day when everybody's sleepy, somebody's going to notice. And the moment somebody notices, now they've got something on the teacher, and now they've got something they're all really interested in for lots of reasons. So what they usually use this stuff for is a way to, well, when you come down to it, make the students laugh, but get them really, really curious about something that before that moment, almost everybody would have run away from.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark Abrams, the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research and the man behind the Ig Nobel Awards. He's going to be speaking tonight at St. Mary's University, the Lynn Great Speakers Series. This is an event that's free and open to the public. There are more details on our website at tpr.org. His magazine is the Annals of Improbable Research, and the website is
improbable.com.
And don't go there if you got a lot of stuff to do, because you're going to be sucked in. You'll cross the event horizon and be there for a long time. This is The Source on KSTX.